Brad nodded inside his helmet. "Nix, you're right. Why don't you take as many folk as you need and go back to the village? The others can stay with me and help me search." 11 gamins went with Nix, several of them obviously reluctant to go back to their usual work instead of searching for the shelter. As they left, Lung said to Brad, "How will the new folk live with us still in the village? We'll build a new village for them. But the cold time will be upon us soon. None of us can live through the cold time." Brad got a vision of a mini ice age freezing the planet. "My people will help you to survive," he said, with a confidence he really didn't feel. "We'll get you through the cold time." Lung accepted his word. Brad thought, "He's got more faith in me than I do." They searched through the sloping grassy field where the shelter had been. Nothing. Hot red Mithra climbed higher in the sky. The floodwaters dwindled away, leaving the ground gooey and foul-smelling. No sign of the oval white shelter. Despite his suit's climate control system whining away, Brad was sweating by the time they reached the edge of the woods. He clicked his helmet's telescopic lenses into place and started scanning the trees. And there it was. The shelter was nestled high in one of the trees, which had been bent far over by the powerful winds of the storm. Brad stared at it. Cradled in the branches high above, the shelter looked intact. He could see no rips or holes in its surface. He touched the keypad on his wrist, and the lenses slid away from his eyes. "There it is!" He pointed. The gamins stared up at it.
"How can we get it?" Lung asked. "It's too high for us to reach."
Brad realized they had never tried to climb the trees. They had no tools for climbing, no experience. "Neither do I," he told himself. He tried his communications system again, and again got nothing except no signal. The comm gear must have been damaged by its ride through the air, he concluded. Turning to Lung, he said, "You take the others back to the village. I'll stay here a while. I'll be back by sundown." Lung shuffled uncertainly. "Go on," Brad insisted. "The monsters are dying. You'll be all right." As they reluctantly started off, Brad told himself, "All right, you're alone here. Kossoff and the others are still in orbit around Alpha. Felicia's there, probably worried sick about me. Nothing I can do about that. Not right now." He squinted up at the shelter again. So close. No more than 30 or 40 meters away. But the distance was vertical, and he had no way to climb it. Once the gamins were out of sight, Brad went through the ugly business of defecating and burying the sanitary container. No more containers in the suit, he saw. The rest of them are in the shelter. With my food. He felt like sinking down into the muddy ground and giving up. Which will kill me, he asked himself. Starvation or infection? Felicia sat in front of Kossoff's desk, every nerve in her body strung tight.
"But surely you realize," the professor was saying, in a tone that was close to condescending, "that we can't break orbit here and fly to Gamma just because your husband might be in danger."
"He might be dead," Felicia burst.
"Then he's beyond our help," Kossoff said.
"But we've got to get there, now. Brad might be hurt. We could save him."
"Now, now," Kossoff said, trying to soothe her.
"Brad's had survival training. He apparently got through the worst of the storms. It's probably just a communications glitch that will be cleared up soon. He's alone and in danger on an alien world without anyone to help him. We've got to go to Gamma and help him."
Kossoff's office door slid open, and Captain Desai stepped in, wearing his formal black uniform with silver piping.
"Trying to impress me," Felicia thought.
"You called me," Desai said, hesitating at the doorway, looking puzzledly at Felicia.
Yes, said Kossoff. Gesturing to one of the chairs before his desk, he said, "Sit down, please, and explain to this distraught young woman why we can't take off for Gamma for another few days."
Lightly as a dancer, Desai went to the chair and settled his lean body into it. "Our flight plan has us breaking orbit around Alpha the day after tomorrow. By that time, Gamma and Beta will be separated far enough so that there will be no gravitational complications to prevent us from establishing a stable orbit around Gamma once again."
"But we could go now if we had to," Felicia prompted.
Desai glanced at Kossoff's stony expression and replied in his soft voice, "If we had to. There is some risk, of course,
All of the commsats we had placed in orbit around Gamma have been ripped away by the gravitational tides of Beta's sweeping past. We mustn't put this ship in such risk. In 2 days, it should be quite safe. Until then, not. Felicia stared at his dark, serious face. Turning to Kossoff, she recognized his unyielding expression. They're right, she thought. They can't risk the whole ship for one man. One man who might already be dead. But she heard herself say, couldn't you send a communication satellite to Gamma now and try to reestablish a link with Brad? Desai looked questioningly at Kossoff. I suppose that is possible, the captain said. For long moments, Kossoff said nothing. He stared at Felicia, making her feel uncomfortable. At last, he nodded curtly and said, yes, we could do that. For you. Felicia felt a cold chill tingle along her spine. Survival. Standing alone at the edge of the battered, rain-soaked forest, Brad realized that he had to find the shuttlecraft that had carried him to Gamma's surface. It's got food, tools, equipment, he remembered, and its own communications system. I could contact the ship with it. Then his momentary exhilaration faded, if the storms haven't blown it away or damaged it. Then he realized it's also got a homing beacon. His fingers trembling with excitement, Brad pecked out the beacon's code on his wrist keyboard. The most beautiful hum Brad had ever heard sounded gently, steadily in his earphones. Brad felt exultant. If the beacon's working, he thought, chances are the shuttle's other electronic systems are working too. He started tramping across the soggy ground as if following the music of a marching band. The shuttle's built to fly me back to the starship, he told himself. Captain Desai's people can shoot an automated program to the shuttle's computer, and the bird can take off and bring me to Alpha and the ship, and Felicia. He recalled that there was a 3-minute time lag for two-way communications from Alpha. Okay, so they'll send a complete program. Take off, fly through the atmosphere, and establish orbit. That will be the hard part with me sitting there doing nothing. Everything pre-programmed, automated. Once in orbit around Gamma, getting to Odysseus in orbit around Alpha should be easy. But he thought about Mx and Lung and the other Gammons. I told them I'd be back tonight. What'll they do when I don't show up? Can they survive without me? And Felicia. Will she be glad to see me? Is she angry that I didn't return to her when I had the chance? Do the Gammons know how to build a new village for the generation that's about to come to life? The biologists will go crazy, studying a new life form, an intelligent species that grow out of the ground like plants. I can't leave them, Brad knew. I've interfered with their life cycle, and now I've got to help them through the next steps, before their long winter sets in. I can't leave them. His triumphal march through the soaked, muddy meadow slowed to an almost reluctant pace. He passed the carcasses of 2 more of the monsters from Beta, dead and already rotting. I can't leave them, he repeated to himself. I've got to help them. Then he spotted the shuttlecraft in the distance, sitting in the meadow where he had left it a seeming lifetime ago. Its silvery metal skin glowed warmly, invitingly, in the afternoon sunlight. Kossoff looked down the long conference table. Every department head was present, chatting in hushed tones. We're all here, Kossoff said by way of calling them to order. Let's start. Ursula Steiner, sitting tall and regal halfway down the table, said, I haven't received an agenda for this meeting. Neither have I, said Peterson, the planetologist. Just an announcement that you wanted us here at 1600 hours. Like a summons, almost. There isn't an agenda, Kossoff replied. Not yet. In a sense, I've called this meeting to thrash out what our agenda should be once we return to Gamma. That's unorthodox, Steiner said. Kossoff answered, We're faced with an unorthodox situation. Very unorthodox. Little John, seated at Kossoff's right, looked uncomfortable, upset. You're referring to McDaniels' interference with the Gammons. More than that, Kossoff said. Much more than that. From the far end of the table, Elizabeth Chang spoke up in her soft, smoky voice. McDaniels has violated the basic rule of alien contact.
He's interfered with the alien's fundamental beliefs. He's cast himself in the role of savior, almost a god.
Little John countered. He saved the Gamins from extermination. He couldn't stand by and let those big cats kill them all. He might have been killed himself.
Unruffled, Chang insisted. Still, he has violated the most basic rule of alien contact. Non-interference.
Peterson objected. So what was he supposed to do? Stand by and let the aliens be killed to the last man? That's inhuman.
They're all going to die anyway, said Steiner. They can't survive the deep freeze that the planet's climate is heading for.
I'm not so sure about that, Littlejohn countered. With our help, they might be able to get through it. Or perhaps hibernate through the winter.
More interference, said Chang.
What's done is done, Kossoff said with a dismissive wave of his hand. We can't undo it. The question is, where do we go from here?
Silence.
The men and women looked at each other, each one waiting for someone else to reply. And something else, Kossoff added. Something of far greater import.
Quentin Abbott nodded vigorously.
What or who created this situation?
Exactly. What do you mean?
Hunching his shoulders slightly and leaning forward as though preparing to push a great weight, Kossoff said, this planetary system's current condition is not natural. Something, he nodded toward Abbott, or someone, created the situation we see today.
Abbott took up the theme.
We've done dozens of simulation runs regarding the orbits of this system's planets. Alpha is a gas giant that's losing its ocean and atmosphere at an alarming rate because it orbits so close to Mithra. Beta and Gamma are in these long, looping orbits that lock them into ice ages for most of their years. And the cats transfer from Beta to Gamma when the two planets are closest, Kossoff said. That is not natural, definitely not.
Something happened to this planetary system, Abbott said. Something catastrophic. Something that pushed Alpha almost into Mithra itself and locked Beta and Gamma into their extremely eccentric orbits. Probably knocked one or more other planets out of the system altogether.
Something? Peterson demanded. What?
MC can show you the recreation my people have put together, Abbott said. It boils down to this. Roughly 100 to 200,000 Earth years ago, this planetary system went through a cataclysmic event.
Perhaps so, said Chang. But that doesn't mean the event wasn't natural. Another star could have passed near enough to scramble the planet's orbits.
Kossoff called to Steiner. Ursula, you're a biologist. How do you account for having a predator arise on one planet and its prey on a different planet? How do you account for the predators flying to their prey in vehicles that are part incubators and part spacecraft?
Steiner blinked at him.
It can't be natural, Kossoff insisted. Some intelligence designed all this and set it in motion.
No one contradicted him.
Decisions.
Brad hurried eagerly across the muddy grass toward the shuttlecraft. It's there, he said to himself, feeling exultant. It's all in one piece. The storms haven't smashed it up. Then he saw that the craft was canted to one side as if pushed over by a giant hand. The delta-shaped wing on that side was crumpled against the ground. I won't be flying out of here, Brad realized. Strangely, he didn't feel disappointed. The decision's been made, he thought. I'm staying here on Gamma. He walked up to the crippled spacecraft and saw that its entry hatch was on the undamaged side.